Welcome to the I Am a Feminine Leader podcast. Conversations with women who have transformed challenging life experiences into powerful lessons that have inspired community building in all aspects of their lives. I am your host, Michelle Hirsayeg-Nesit, community design and impact specialist, here to activate the community builder in you with inspiring stories, practical tools, and strategies that anyone with passion and vision for community building can use to amplify their impact. Let's get started, shall we? Welcome back to the I'm a Feminine Leader podcast. This week, I am joined by Cheryl Prue, who is the Executive Director of Adoption Options. She's also an ambassador for Gems for Gems in Calgary, Alberta. And Cheryl, I would love for you to start us off with what community means to you.
I love that question. Community to me means all of us working together to better our place where we live and work and have our families.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard previous guests on the podcast say that community is not necessarily where you live, but it's how you live. And I know that Gems for Gems is one of those organizations that for me really embodies that because what Jordan and all of the people involved in the organization have done and demonstrated through their ambassadorship and their leadership is how they've transformed their lived experience with domestic violence or with gender-based violence or adoption or anything like that into a powerful lesson. And so I'm curious to hear from you, Cheryl, like how Adoption Options kind of came to be and how this relationship with Gems for Gems began.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is about our lived experiences. So my initial connection to Adoption Options started when I was 16 years old and found myself facing an unintended pregnancy and needing support and wanting to understand what all of my options were in a very scary, scary time in my life. And I was very fortunate to make a phone call to Adoption Options and have a very warm, comforting social worker answer the call and invite myself and my mom to come in and just meet and talk about all of our options. And just the care that I received there in comparison to other places, once it was, you know, openly discussed, this young teenager was pregnant, was just so, you know, life-changing for me. And ultimately led me into a career of social work and wanting to support other women facing unintended pregnancies and ensuring that they were also met with warmth and information and empowerment and no judgment. So that's what led me into social work. And I initially started in working in child welfare system. And then my predecessor invited me over to the Adoption Options team. And so I did frontline work here for a long time and then became the executive director back in 2008. And in the last few years, I got to know Jordan Guilford with Gems for Gems and hearing all about what they were doing and was immediately excited and drawn to Jordan's level of passion and hard work and commitment to making a difference in women's lives, but really in communities across the country. So I initially had a phone call with Jordan, and honestly, I just fell in love with her passion and her drive. And we've gotten to know each other better ever since. And she moved back to Calgary, which is where I am. And we started meeting on a regular basis. And when they came up with the initiative for Hope's Cradle, I said, yes, I'm in. Because in our line of work here, we have worked with women who are, you know, in very dire straits and facing unplanned pregnancy. And had they not found our services, I believe we're at very high risk for making desperate decisions. And so I was very well aware of the circumstances of finding babies in dumpsters and that hitting the news, but also knowing there was far more incidents like that happening in our communities. And so when Jordan called me and said, "Cheryl, we're starting this initiative, Hope's Cradle," I said, "I'm in. Let me know how I can help, how I can support." And that's how that sort of came to be.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story, because I'm sure that that's something that over time you've had to cultivate some resilience for. It's not something that is easy to share, that you yourself, you know, endured an unwanted pregnancy and you had to make those hard choices and you were in the system. And I think it's incredible that you've kind of come full circle now, that your career is centered around helping women that were in your situation and understanding so intimately the thought process that a woman goes through when she's in that situation, because it doesn't matter if you go to school and get a degree in social work or, you know, whatever type of education you have in social services. Like, if you haven't lived it, you know, can you truly say that you know? You know, it's something that you know that you can never unknow. And that is a really unique perspective and gift that you're offering to the community as executive director. And so I just want to celebrate you because that's amazing. And I think that, you know, definitely the passion that Jordan has for women and girls, for the family, for community engagement and development, I think it was just like a natural match, you know, the way that you're describing it. And so, you know, as you have kind of forged this partnership with Hope's Cradle, what kind of trends or observations have you had since you've joined forces that have actually revealed them, like opportunities for women and girls who are facing these challenges?
That's a good question. I think that Hope's Cradle has brought to light some very dark corners of our community, right? So bringing to the public's attention a greater understanding that these incidences are happening and that we need to talk more openly about ensuring that we're providing all options counseling to everybody. So if you are in a predicament of facing an unplanned pregnancy, that you know what your options are and that there are resources out there to go to, so you don't find yourself in such a desperate state. The reality is, in terms of somebody who might use a Hope's Cradle, often they're in very extreme, dire circumstances. And again, shining a light on even greater issues, social issues going on in our community. And so to me, Hope's Cradle has just been able to bring voice to some of these more challenging things happening in our society, and that we do need to publicly acknowledge them, talk about them, ensure the resources are not just there, but they're known about, and offer support to hopefully, you know, save a child and a woman.
Yeah. And I remember that when I had my interview with Jordan, she had kind of highlighted a couple of situations that they report on when a child is surrendered, you know, that there's a questionnaire that women will fill out and that there's an investigation afterwards. And there's like a process that allows for systems at large, like the judicial system, the healthcare system, to be able to gather information to start to formulate analysis around what compels a woman to feel like that she needs to surrender her child. And starting to understand, I guess, the intersectionalities of what is impacting that woman and what is influencing her decisions. And one of them I remember her describing was how if a woman is trying to escape domestic violence, she may just need a place for her child to be safe. Or it might be that she's homeless and she doesn't have the resources to care for a child, or any number of reasons that a woman has. And so in your role with Hope's Cradle, can you just elaborate a little bit more about where you fit into that process? You know, like I'm a woman, I'm approaching a Hope's Cradle, I'm surrendering my child, and you know, the alarm goes off, a first responder comes. You know, where are you in this process? Mm-hmm. And then also, how does the Adoption Options organization fit into the next steps for that child?
Yeah. It's a good question. Adoption Options doesn't have any direct connection to Hope's Cradle. We are advocating for some legislative changes here in Alberta to support immediate permanency for any child placed in a Hope's Cradle after a certain time period has passed, which is legally we've been provided direction on 30 days. And so we are advocating for a process because we would love to not see that baby go into our child welfare system and thereby go into foster home, maybe permanency, when currently on our adoption options wait list, we have 100 vetted waiting prospective adoptive parents who would be over the moon to provide immediate permanency for that child. So we are advocating for that right now. Currently, as the system is in terms of regulations in place right now, once a baby has been placed in a Hope's Cradle, they are immediately assessed medically and taken to the hospital, and children's services or social services has to be contacted, and they would then assume the care and responsibility of that baby legally. And when medically cleared, that baby would be placed in a foster home. So I think there is a missing piece there. And I think Jordan and I would love to see a process in place to provide a baby with an immediate forever loving home. So we're working on it right now. That is not the system. My role as an ambassador is a volunteer one and separate from Adoption Options. And really, it's just to advocate that this is a needed thing in our communities across the country. And there's a good way to support it. So ensuring that if a woman or anybody places a baby in this Hope's Cradle, they're not going to be criminally charged as long as the child doesn't have any evidence of being injured. And they're not going to have to face scrutiny in terms of an investigation. So they can do it, you know, anonymously in the cradle. And this is one thing that I'm so proud of Hope's Cradle for ensuring. There is resource information. There is information for the person placing the child to fill out in terms of sharing information about the child, which of course is hope that they might do. And part of that resource information is a connection with a psychologist and other community agencies. So it's been incredibly well thought out, and the response from the community has been incredible, including fire halls and psychologists and healthcare professionals all really working together to ensure that this was done well. And Gems for Gems is really been phenomenal in ensuring that.
So Cheryl, I really appreciate you kind of explaining the details of how the Adoption Options, how I guess your community supports Gems for Gems and also Hope's Cradle, because mm-hmm. I think that when we think about the mental load that a woman would carry to get to a space where she's making these types of decisions, mm-hmm. you know, what kinds of supports does she really truly need to make an informed decision, right? Because like you were describing before, you know, unfortunately, children are being found in dumpsters, children are being abandoned, because women are desperate and they don't feel like they have other options. And as an ambassador, you are advocating for these women to have education and to have options. And so what are some ways that you're doing that? And also, is there anything that the listeners can get involved in and support?
I love that question too. So in terms of like our outreach efforts, like we're a super small not-for-profit agency and registered charity, but at Adoption Options, we have amazing volunteers that are supporting our outreach efforts. So doing, well, different interviews, doing in-services with various other community agencies, such as agency supporting domestic violence, the women's shelters, addiction centers, healthcare centers, all the touch points that women tend to, vulnerable women might need those supports, housing, different things like that. And then social media outreach and education. We hold a variety of webinars and different things just to educate people on what our services are, what all of the options are, and encourage them to share it. Our government did recently provide us with a positive adoption awareness grant. And so we're in the development of putting together an advertising campaign, and we're hoping to begin releasing that come November. And I think that will be tremendous support in terms of getting more understanding to the greater community. And Hope's Cradle too, I know resources is always a big one because it takes time and money to do a really good job at outreach work. And they've done incredible work in that area with very, very limited resources through volunteerism. So through the ambassadors and all of the connections and community supporters, just talking about it, sharing, getting into the media, and opportunities like this. So I'm grateful for that. And so to your listeners, I would just say, be informed yourself and share. Talk about it, you know, bring up these conversations with your family, friends, colleagues, and build that awareness that way, because that goes a long, long way. We start talking about it and recognizing that there's issues and then advocating for change and development, then we can all push that boulder up the hill together.
Yeah. And awareness building also, I would think, with this type of topic, because it's so sensitive, mm-hmm. You know, it's such a sensitive and for many people triggering topic to explore. And I would think that, you know, how do you, when you are doing public education or literacy about these types of topics, whether it be about, you know, teen pregnancy or unwanted pregnancy or adoption or, you know, domestic violence and all of these things, at what point are you engaging women on their journey? Do most of the women that come to you, are they kind of in the thick of it and they're like needing help now? Or are you reaching audiences that are, you know, it's more about awareness building and education? Or I'm really curious, because I think that when I think about myself, and I thought, yes, educating yourself is such a powerful tool, mm-hmm. but what triggers that exploration for mm-hmm. your people or for the community? I'm curious to hear.
Mm. There's a lot there. I would say there's several things there. So most people have, know somebody or they themselves have experienced an unplanned pregnancy or thought they might be pregnant, or know somebody who's been adopted or have faced fertility loss and needed to explore their options in terms of parenting. So I think it's finding the connecting points that register with somebody to say, oh, I can relate to that, or I know somebody who could have benefited for that. So I think those connection points, using positive language. So in terms of unintended pregnancy, an unplanned pregnancy is really important, because it's usually not unwanted, it's just unintended. And getting to the heart of you know, there's now a child and a woman in need here, and how can we rally around and make sure they're cared for and supported? So all of those things. In terms of our services at Adoption Options, women contact us when they are in, crisis. So they have just learned they're pregnant. They're often quite far along in their pregnancy, and they are needing support, you know, right now to understand what their options are. Unfortunately, women who, even in this day and age, facing unintended pregnancies are still face tremendous shame and guilt in our communities. And you know, they are told you keep that child, you don't give away your child, but to make an adoption plan is still really shame-based. And so our messaging is this is, you know, a choice, and it's always about wanting the child to have the best life possible. And because they love that child, no matter what else is going on in their life or in their circumstances. And even for a woman or person who is in a situation to ultimately make the decision to place a child in a hope's cradle, you must appreciate that their circumstance must be so desperate and dire or unsafe that they are needing to do this to ensure this child has opportunity, will be safe. And they really are making a powerful decision and probably risking a lot by even doing that. So it's quite incredible. And so I think informing and teaching, you know, that there's real love there, and we shouldn't be judging. We need to be supporting, and trying to eliminate that shame is the messaging that I hope most people, once they hear it and we start talking about it, can really embrace.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And I appreciate you making the distinction in the choice of words, because as soon as you corrected me and you shifted the language from unwanted pregnancy to unintended, I was like, whoa, oh my gosh.
That's yes. Powerful.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, of course. I mean, my lived experience with both of my pregnancies was they were planned and I had healthy pregnancies. I was truly fortunate that shift was actually quite powerful for me. And I have a lot of gratitude for you pointing that out, because, you know, those are like the very subtle shifts that can make such a huge impact. And so that is, I think, a great example of how we can very intentionally create a more nurturing and supportive environment just by making those subtle shifts. And so thank you for that. And I really felt that. Like I felt that in my heart. And I was like, oh darn. I was like, of course. You know, and so provide maybe a few more examples, because I'm sure that our listeners are like, oh yeah, wow. You know, like when, because sometimes when we say something, it has a different meaning. Mm. But when we consider the community at large, when we consider all of the challenges and the stigmas and the barriers that these women have to overcome, you know, something as simple as making a more sensitive identification of their experience or acknowledging them in a different way can make all the difference for them. So I'd love for you to share a few more if you have.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, that word is so common and it's just used. So I do believe it's important to always sort of address it, because it's also impactful to that child down the road. And so in terms of women who have made an adoption plan for their child, all I can say is they are only able to do so out of love. And seeing that they are not able to give this child everything he, she, or they need or deserve or they want for this child. And so it's always done out of love, no matter what else is going on. So yes, we work with women from all different backgrounds and circumstances. I didn't mean to get pregnant here, and now what do I do? I'm not in a position to be a mom right now, and but I want these things for my child, you know, a stable, loving home and opportunity and all of those things. And I want to pursue getting my PhD to women who are homeless, who are battling significant mental health and addiction, and really just trying to survive and realize that they're pregnant and that this is not a life for a child, and they really want this child to have a shot at life and are not able to even consider parenthood at that point. And then there's stories all in between those two extreme circumstances and situations. So there is no blanket for what a birth parent looks like or who they are. It could be anybody. And at the end of the day, I would like for women to just understand what all of their options are and to be supported in whatever decision they ultimately make. And especially for a woman who's in a really desperate, desperate situation, to have a safe haven to make sure that child is safe and potentially change her own circumstances following that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can see how for these women, adoption is something that provides them an outlet for ensuring the safety and the sustainment of their child. You know, that they are, it's a really selfless act that they are giving their child to another family or allowing that child to have opportunities they wouldn't otherwise have. Mm-hmm. And then for these women, after they've made these choices and their life is, you know, moving forward, how does your organization and your advocacy and your awareness support these women in moving forward? You know, how does a woman move forward from that? And how can we, people around these women who maybe know someone or come to know someone who's had this lived experience, how can we can support them best?
So yeah, I mean, there's grief and loss for everybody in the adoption circle. There's no other way to look at that. However, there's also a lot of love there. So our agency does provide free, confidential, and lifelong counseling services one-on-one to any woman who has placed a child through our agency. We also have a incredible birth parent support group who meets every month. And then we have what's called Birth Mother's Day, which is held the day before Mother's Day every year. We do a special ceremony and day recognizing any woman who's placed a child for adoption and just really honoring their story, their journey. Having that peer connection is really powerful. So, yeah, that's a credible event. And just offering the opportunity to have a safe space to share their story and to work on their healing and goal setting. So we try to support them the best we can through that.
Yeah. And I feel like that having that community support, if you do not have access to people that you can really share authentically your experience with, that could be a pretty heavy burden, if not a secret, that some women might want to carry because of the stigma that is out there. Yes. So for a woman who, and I mean, you're one of those women who has given a child up for adoption, are most of the adoptions open adoptions, closed adoptions? Is there, you know, a balance of the two? And have you noticed any trends and preference of style of adoption through your organization?
Yeah. So our agency is grassroots, and our founder really brought open adoption practice to Alberta and forged the way for legislative changes in terms of opening records here. So really proud of that. So we do practice open adoption. What that means is there is a complete sharing of information. The level of relationship or contact, for another word, varies completely, but all adoptions are open because it's a voluntary process where birth parents choose the adoptive parents based on our approved waiting list. And then there is an exchange of information between the two. So the prospective adoptive parents get information on the birth family and vice versa. And then there is some form of relationship afterwards, and that looks different for everybody. So again, depending on the circumstances of the birth parent and what their hopes are and abilities are in terms of maintaining a relationship, just vary. So we have some situations where there is very, very little to no ongoing contact. And then at the very opposite end of the spectrum, you become really true extended family members, and the birth parents have a very open and involved relationship. Parents are parents, so that's one myth out there. The adoptive parents are mom and dad, or the parents, and birth mom is the birth mom, but holds a special place. Most relationships fall somewhere in between, where people get together a few times a year, they exchange pictures and have phone calls or text messages in between those times. So I've been very fortunate to have a very close relationship with my son, who's now 33, just had his first child, so I'm a grandma. And his parents, yeah, they just live in the next community to us. So we're so blessed. But that took work. And, you know, and his parents are just exceptional. And I love them dearly. I know they love us dearly. So that's one example. And that can happen. So, yeah, the relationships vary. And I just say, like any relationship in your life, relationships take time and nurturing and have to be fluid. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I can't even imagine how many challenges a family would need to overcome to be able to come to a space where they could share that type of relationship together. And then for a child to, I can't even imagine what they would have to go through emotionally to understand, okay, to really understand and to appreciate, you know, the choices that the mom made and then the life that they had, and to come full circle. But if you have the systems and the support around you, then it can become a really amazing family unit in its own way. Yeah. And I believe that that's really what you and Hope's Cradle and Gems for Gems, that's what your mission is, just to unify the family, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said this to Jordan several times, and that's why I'm so grateful for this conversation, and for anyone listening, you know, because this is a very sensitive topic. But if we can start a dialogue in our households with our children, you know, to not stigmatize adoption, to not stigmatize pregnancy, or anything like that, to create awareness around these issues, very real incidences that are happening in our communities, then form a supportive community around us so that when we are faced with these challenges, we're not feeling like we're alone. Absolutely. So thank you so much for being with us, Cheryl. And before we wrap up today, I would love for you to share with the listeners a little bit more about, again, how can our listeners get involved? If there's any campaigns or any specific resources that you would like to direct us to so that we can educate ourselves and also bring greater awareness to what the amazing work that you're doing.
Awesome. Definitely check out Gems for Gems website and learn more about Hope's Cradle and get talking about it. Certainly, I would encourage you to go on our own website as well, adoptionoptions.com. And there are some videos that also highlight sort of the background, real life stories of what the option of adoption looks like today. And start talking, have these conversations about if you were to face an unintended pregnancy, what are the options out there and what are the community supports, and what is the ultimate vision in terms of family and ensuring safety and security for all members in our community, and how we can best support everybody in that way.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. So I'm going to put those links in the show notes, everybody, and we'll be back next week with another amazing community building story. So come on back.